Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Josh Brown, it's the wind-up. It's also the day after I beat Returnal. That's one of the things that I'm really going to write down as a life milestone. I should also point out that this is the wind-up. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Good morning, man. You look absolutely glorious. The people at home can't appreciate this, but you look more HD than you ever have. And I'm putting that down to you beating Returnal last night. And undoubtedly... In the early hours of the morning, was it?
Yes. No, so I told you on Friday that I was going to play a lot more Returnal, and I think I said the exact words, I look forward to it ruining my weekend. And I did play it most of the weekend. It was balanced against Call of Duty and a few other things like Guardians of the Galaxy. And we're going to get to other stuff as well. This is the wind-up. This is the big energy-fueled podcast for the start of the week where we tackle the latest games, the latest stories, the latest bits and bobs worth talking about. But we're also going to have a bit of a back and forth on Returnal because looking at the trophy data, there's only like 20% of people that are in the rarefied air that is the current space that me and you are in, i.e. they've beaten Act 2, which is where you get the first credit sequence. There's a whole secret thing, but it's what you could class as the end of the game, technically, because there are credits and stuff like that. But then there is another whole thing, which I'm now in the middle of, because this hell just doesn't end, but I need to hit the secret ending. But point being, I thought we'd have a back and forth on Returnal, because I feel like not that many people have been able to have a conversation about it holistically, because that completion data is so small. And so when I did a tweet over the last couple of days just saying that I was going through it and stuff, and I asked people in a poll, you know, has anyone actually finished this game? And again, it supported the trophy data, and it seems that the people who have finished it absolutely ruddy love it and think that it's their game of the year, like you. And then there are other people who are just like, no, it's not for me, it takes too long and the runs are too long and it doesn't pay off. And so I'm in the middle right now, but what are your thoughts on Returnal this far in, because you did do the initial review as well?
Yeah, 100%. I just want to say I find it quite funny that we have talked about Returnal a lot over the years since we've done that review. We've talked about it in videos, we've talked about it in podcasts. Just the single year, it's felt like years. I want to reiterate what you mentioned there, yes. In that we haven't actually been able to talk about it holistically or as a kind of end game experience, because, you know, I've been waiting on you and Ben Roy to finally pull your socks up, to stay up till 3 a.m. and finally beat this game. So I'm so excited to be able to talk about it properly, because yes, Returnal is still my game of the year. I thought it might have been beaten by now, but it's one of those titles that just lingers even long after you've completed it, or at least got to the end of Act 2, long after you've got the secret ending, and in my opinion, long after I got to the platinum, to the point where you're going through it and you're kind of having this cruel time, as you described it, you know, getting whipped by some of the fellas in the final area. And I'm just sat there thinking, I wish I could play this fresh. I wish I could play this having not platinumed it, having not put 50 hours into it, because I love it that much and I'm such a glutton for punishment.
The thing for me is that I think it, like, I can see the argument for it being game of the year. I do prefer it, I think, overall to Resident Evil 8. That was my other one that was sort of in the top five sort of thing. I haven't really started having the actual conversation for me personally what my actual game of the year would be, but this is going to be in the top 10. It's almost by default it's in the top 10. But I think that it is such an intricate clockwork mechanism of a game, or it wants to be. It wants to be a Hades-like, a Dead Cells, a Rogue Legacy. It wants to be a really cool roguelike. And I feel like, like I said, when I messaged you, the one word that comes to mind for me when I finally hit credits is cruel. I think that it's a cruel game. I don't think it rewards you as anywhere near as much as the amount of time it asks you to put in. And I feel like because it's Housemarque's first 3D game at all, and it's their first attempt at a roguelike in this way. And for me, one of the crucial things that a roguelike needs to have is an overarching progression. You need to have something where if you're banking half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, most roguelikes, you don't even have a run that's that long, really. It tends to be a bit shorter, but you do, you know, contribute to something over time. Maybe maybe you start differently. Maybe you're increasing your health pool. Maybe you're building something over time, whatever it is. And Returnal doesn't have that. Returnal has, in a way it does. Returnal has, you know, you can bank an item called Ether to change an item drop pool over time. And every weapon that you use has proficiency that goes up over time. So that's the thing that changes over time. But it doesn't, for me, it doesn't feel anywhere near as worthwhile as starting with more health, starting with more defense, starting with anything other than the pistol. It just feels like and because the runs are so long, it feels more like it would be better served as just a third-person shooter with standard checkpoints. I don't necessarily see what the roguelike structure brings to it, because it feels cruel losing a two-hour run to one thing that killed you in one hit and having to just go do it again. The PS5 loaded instantly. Just go do it again. That was soul-crushing.
It's such a fascinating game and a fascinating experience to talk about, because I can agree with almost everything you just said, but come out the other end of it going, that was amazing. I did not feel crushed. I wanted to do another run.
Like, you were like the Agent Smith meme. Just give me more.
Yeah. Every time I died, you know, I never came away thinking, God, that sucked. God, that really? Was unfair. God, I want to delete this game. Every time I died,
I've deleted it four times, by the way. Because I can't. If it was a person, I would push them out the door. Or if it was, I would do something to. I'd have to hit them or something. I don't know. But you can't do anything to a game, can you? So I just sort of, delete you. I'll delete you again. Or get off my console. And then I sort of look at my phone and I go, well, I'm going to play it in another few hours. So I'll reinstall it again, get it back on the app, right? Put it back on. And then delete it again. Because, I just hate it.
You have to meekishly go back, hit the download button again, wait crawl for 20 minutes to come back again. But yeah, man, like, I agree with you that the progression, you know, it's not like a Hades where you are literally, you know, persisting, upgrading your persistent stats, between different runs. So you're getting stronger, you're getting more energy, health, or whatever. But for me, I'm kind of coming at this from a bit of a disadvantage, because I've played a lot of roguelikes. You know, I've played The Binding of Isaac, I've played Dead Cells, I've played Hades, I've played this, I've played a bit Spelunky. I've dabbled in a lot, but never been hooked by one in the same way that I did Returnal. And so the progression wasn't something that I was comparing to other games per se. So I wasn't kind of playing it, you know, hoping that I was going to increase my health or get a different starting pistol. And I felt that the stuff that did persist between runs, you know, certain abilities and unlocking certain guns so you can get them in like different areas and stuff, and the knowledge of how the world is procedurally generated and the knowledge of how the enemies function, like, that was enough for me. I didn't feel like a run was wasted, because yes, while I wouldn't come back with more XP or a bigger health bar, I did understand how the world worked more, and I could use that knowledge in the next run to defeat those enemies or avoid those enemies or go down this room because I knew for certain there would be a certain power up there, or avoid this room because I knew I couldn't hack one of the golden door challenge rooms, you know, for instance, like that.
That thing, that I think that they needed way more biomes, they needed way more tile sets, they needed way more things to throw at you in a randomized sense, because the amount of time they're asking you to put in, where, like, because I said, the overarching thing that's changing is weapon proficiency, i.e. different weapon abilities, and the ether thing. So, like, obviously, if you're good enough, you can get through this in a lesser amount of time, but I think you said you finished in about 20 hours. My completion time is about 27, 28. So, like, that's a lot of time to go through those same areas over and over again. And there are people now who have put that amount of time in and they're still in the first act because they haven't been able to beat Frike, the first boss. So I think that over time, like, for me, I kept dying in the second last enemy. It's not even a boss. It's just a big creature thing that guards a certain key that you need to one of the final doors. But then you can eventually, like, avoid that too. But my point is that when you rerun those areas over and over again, you see the same tiles, the same layouts, the same enemies over and over and over again. And the pickups are in the same place. And it's nigh on the same pickup as well. And it's just like, there are a bunch of turrets, there are a bunch of flying enemies, but it's the same type of stuff. And I'm running through those areas in the same way over and over again to get back to the one thing that was the challenge. And they put some shortcuts in there, but like I said, it comes back to that feeling of cruel because they want you to redo all that stuff again. And it's like, I am just running through this in the exact same way, corpse running it style, with no real overarching progression other than just hoping that I find something that helps me next time, and just hoping for the best. And that feeling contributed to the soul crushing, well, I hope I do it this time style feeling to it.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's interesting because I could just say I disagree, because for me, the tile variation was never became a point where I was annoyed that I was seeing the same thing over and over again. I think what helps it is that kind of three biome split, you know, you do the first three biomes, you bank those, and then you kind of like checkpoint yourself and you can't go back until you finish the game and you do the other three. And I always thought there was enough variation in there. Maybe it was because I think I finished the full two-act thing with 18 rooms. So okay. I didn't have like hundreds going through the same area over and over again. And that meant that when I got into the end game, was doing the secret ending, was doing the platinum, I was still seeing new rooms that I'd never seen before. Or I was kind of, you know, just like I said, dodging the ones that I knew were optional to kind of get back to where I was a little bit faster when I was looking for those collectibles. And that helped a lot, you know, knowing which rooms were optional, knowing which ones were going to be too much of a risk, being able to just fly through that stuff meant that I was never kind of like languishing around thinking, I'm sick of this tile, I'm sick of these enemies, you know, it's got rote, it's got boring. For me, I was kind of blasting through them, feeling a bit more powerful, feeling like I had a bit more mastery. But I can kind of understand that they're not as visually varied as, you know, even like Hades, which kind of has more personality to the levels. And I can certainly see someone getting a little bit bored or a little bit lost in the weeds with some of the biomes if you had to repeat them over and over and over and over again.
I think it's just, it puts you in a weird space, because for me, it's like, well, I know that like the second last enemy, for example, or the enemies that are in the very last biome, the underwater place, they're going to take you out very quickly. There's a lot of screen filling stuff going on. Like you're going to be able to, you almost need to take a few hits, but obviously you can get better at the evasion and stuff. But it puts that mentality in you of, I need to scan every single room. I need to get all the health upgrades. I need to make sure I'm at max health so that when I pick up a health upgrade, it doesn't just refill my health, but it adds to the max integrity. It adds to my max health and stuff. So I think it instills that mentality in you of go comb everything in, let's say, the fourth biome overall, which is the first of the second set of three, because of the way the game splits itself. There's six in total, two lots of three. So when you're in the first set of the second three, for me, it was always like, well, I know I need to comb this environment, because, I mean, I guess you could argue that I could then spend more time in the snow area before I go to the underwater place, but they give you a shortcut to go to the final boss area. So it's like, in my head, I'm like, well, I want it. That's where the challenge is. That's what I want to do. But I also need to take the time to prepare. So you can argue that I spent too much time in the fourth biome. But for me, that's also where, you know, they're offering you, like, here's a second life figure that you can pick up. Here's some health pickups. And here's all these obelites that you need, all this currency that you need. So I was like, scanning that area over and over and over and over again, same tiles, same placement, same everything, for hours and hours, like 10 hours across the weekend, just that one biome over and over again, dying in the underwater bit, go back to the swampland bit again, do all that again. And that was the thing where I was like, well, this is what the game is telling me to do. I know I need more health. I know I need more protection. I can get it from a snow area, but I'm just swapping a visual. It's just, for me, those things don't line up in a pleasurable way. I know it worked for you, but for me, I was like, I was just trapped there.
I would argue that it's more than just swapping a visual. You know, you talked about there about getting bored of the same tiles, getting bored of the same area. I think you can, you know, again, it's a risk and reward, right? Because you can skip to the snow area, which has harder enemies and a variation in the tiles. But at the same time, like you said, you know, you're kind of encouraged to comb all of the areas to get as powerful as you can be before moving on. It does have some shortcuts and some quick fixes for that, I think, in the fact that every time you get to a new biome, apart from the final one, your weapon proficiency automatically hits a new kind of like limit. So you're,
I wish
you're
they gave you a health thing there.
Level one guns. They do give you a health pack, but yeah, they don't give you like the health upgrade.
Not the max one.
No. But it does give you like some tools so you can certainly farm different areas if you get completely sick of one. And I definitely made use of that in the end game. But yeah, totally. You know, when you're making your way through it for the first time, you kind of feel like you have to comb everything to be as strong as possible. For me, I enjoyed that because it meant I got a mastery of the levels, like I said. So I was going through that fourth biome, absolutely wrecking everything, feeling incredibly strong, going into the snowy area with, you know, a huge amount of integrity, a lot of upgrades to my guns and a lot of different guns to have chosen from at that point. So for me, it wasn't an issue. But yeah, like I said, I can see how you might think that is very cruel, especially if you're spending 10 hours over a weekend in the same biome, just knocking your head off the wall.
It was literally just that, yeah, that feeling. And like I said, it's just, I think that Returnal overall has a communication problem. Like, I don't, because I like a good roguelike. I love Rogue Legacy, I love Dead Cells, I love Hades. And it's just like, it has, for me, it has a communication problem in regards to what specifically what the resources do over time. I hate that the ether and the resin, the malignant resin, are the same color. I think that's just stupid. Like, it's just like, you have to get up close to it, it's purple, you have to get up close to it. And if it shimmers a bit, it's an ether. And if it's another one, you can grab it for something else. But I just like, that's like a microcosm of the things that I don't think they get across that well. Integrity, protection, repair, integrity, all these different terms for what would just be health, defense. Like, there's a way, there should be a way to interpret that game that keeps up with as fast as you can play it, because it wants to be this beautiful liquid game, third person shooting and loot grinds and unlocking stuff over time. And for me, one of those components, it just doesn't mesh. And I think that that comes through in the trophy statistics. Obviously, there's the just the base difficulty to it, but yeah, people are bouncing the hell off this game, and I think it's, I can entirely see why.
I mean, I with the integrity stuff and with the you know, legibility of the upgrades and that, mm-hmm. I'd never had a problem with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that was displayed quite well, and it encourages you to experiment with the different upgrades that you can buy using your ether on different things, in my opinion anyway. You know, some people might get stuck in a mentality of they're doing the same thing over and over again, hoping that it would bear different results. But I feel like it does encourage you to experiment with different things, just because it often gives you different upgrade things to buy, or different items to buy when you get to the little store and what have you. And the thing about the trophy data, I do agree that there's definitely going to be so many people who just, you know, bounce off this game, which the data shows. However, I don't think this is unique to this game specifically, just because if you see completion data for even like single player blockbuster linear games, like there's so much drop off, and yeah, there's definitely going to be more to this. But I don't know
how many people are dying necessarily... to the first boss, though. Like,
yeah, it's just true. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I was playing Sable the other day. I was finishing Sable, and I couldn't believe the small percentage of people who had gotten through that game or even gotten past the first area. So I feel like, in a lot of ways, well, I agree with your point, but also I just have an inherent distrust of trophy data, because it just shows that so many people bounce off so many different games for so many different reasons.
There are people who don't even, you know, it'll be like, oh, here's the trophy for putting your name in on the save select screen, and it's not 100%, so who the hell are those people? So yeah, it's true. And I'm obviously going, I was looking at that data across the last week or so when I went back to Returnal, and I was starting to just get killed again, just going like, oh my god, I can't make a dent in this thing. But also, like, and then looking for that sort of almost confirmation bias type stuff, looking at that data, I do think it's like, it is valid to a point. Like, I think that the fact that a lot of people are, even a lot of fans point out that Frike, the first boss, is one of the hardest in the whole game. And I will say that the final boss, Ophion, is possibly the easiest boss in the whole game. Like, it's by the time you get there, even if you're not max health, I mean, you know, like quadruple amounts of damage and stuff, it's a very easy amount of patterns to dodge. I did it first time, but I died more to the creature that came before that. One thing that's interesting, though, and is a talking point that goes across roguelikes, which is something that broke Hades for you, and I wonder if it's what had an effect on me for Returnal, is, and this is it'd be a weird phrasing, but if you're good at games, and I know you're really, really good at games, like, you flew through Hades to the point where it almost broke the story for you, because then you missed out on loads of character dialogue. You got so far through that it meant that you then had to replay that whole game to get back to that final challenge again, and you just want to do that because that's the main challenge. That's what I had with Returnal. I feel like I flew through those first few arcs. I did that Frike boss, I think, second time, and then managed to get through it. And it's not some horn tooting thing to be like, oh my god, I flew through it. But there is sometimes an inherent problem with the genre where they want to pace you in a certain way, so that you know, you're not stuck in one biome leveling up to get back to the boss that you got stuck on. Because I think if you went from the very beginning of Returnal and did all those biomes in a row, which is what you do at the very end if you want to do the secret ending stuff, you're then stood in better stead to get right back up to that final boss again, as opposed to starting at the half mark and going from there on again. Like, there is something about roguelikes, and if you're good at something, flying through it, missing a certain level of upgrades, and then having to kind of try and cram them at the last minute, and then dying and getting annoyed and breaking the pacing of where they want you to be.
Yeah, it's an intriguing thing, and I think it's why I've bounced off roguelikes and, you know, what have you in the past, especially with Hades. That game, I kind of felt like I blitzed through the opening, got so far through to the very end.
In second it was run or something, you were like, just beating him, to be honest. He's just, who's that? Not even heard of him.
It was something daft to the point where, you know, you were talking about all these characters and the story and all this different dialogue you're getting. And I was like, I don't know, I did it in like five goes and now I need to do it 10 more times.
I was in before I got to Hades. I think I was, maybe it was 20, but it was a lot. And and I was loving that game, the characters. I remember you just being like, well, I didn't get any of that because I beat him. Just walked up to him, to be honest. It's brilliant.
It's true. I remember someone commented on the Returnal thing because obviously, you know, when I was playing Returnal, didn't have anyone to talk to about it because it was obviously embargoed. You didn't have it. No one had
that would have killed me, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. None of the none of the reviews are out. So in my review as a criticism, I kind of put that thing that you just mentioned there, that it didn't kind of react to you if you were blitzing through it. The story didn't kind of match up with the actual experience. Mm. And then I had some people in the comments being like, oh, that's a bit of a humble brag, isn't it? And I was like, oh, no, it's it is obviously in a way, but valid. Also it is kind of a valid criticism because if you do blitz it, it's a very different experience, like you said, to someone who is, you know, spending 10, 15 hours in Bio 1 and then, you know, just feeling done by the time they get to the second biome and especially the third biome when they're like, oh my god, there are three more to go.
My thing with the pacing is that because they checkpoint you two sets of three levels, and because you're then starting from what is the fourth biome overall and you need to get back to the final boss of the final area, and like I mentioned before, you feel like this impetus to crawl every tile set, to crawl every corner of everything to make sure you have enough health, because you know that those enemies are going to swipe you in one or two hits, which is what happened to me, and you know that that's going to, you know, they're going to be there, but then the sheer time invested to comb those tile sets is half an hour, 45 minutes, 1 hour. It's a massive amount of time to invest in a run-based game, only for it to go sideways when you get caught by... Well, we haven't even talked about the projectiles, the lasers, the amount of stuff that comes at you, especially in that final area, and things that can go through walls. You can unlock some abilities that also let you shoot through walls, but obviously you can't see what you're shooting at, but there's that stuff, and it's that whole feeling of, like I said, it's a sort of a fundamental unbalance of challenge and expectation and pacing and where they want you to be. And like, it was that thing where I was, the challenge for me was just sheer in how much will I put up with. It's not like, if you just checkpoint me back in that fight, for me the challenge should be, can I avoid all these projectiles, can I shoot this thing, can I beat this boss? And obviously it is inherent to the game genre overall, have I prepared properly? But there was also that feeling of a base run takes forever to even get back to that point. And that's, again, why I reinforce the word cruel just is everywhere for me with this. I think it's something that is largely intentional based on the subject matter of the story, and what Selena's overcoming and what you find out at the end and everything. But also in terms of how much it doesn't respect your time as a gamer or as a player, as a consumer. For me, it's one of the most fundamentally insulting games in that regard that I've ever played. Like, just full on, we don't care, do it again. Like, that was the feeling I got.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It is, and I definitely feel sympathy for anyone who just doesn't have the time to, you know, dedicate to those long runs. I know there is a suspend feature now, which hopefully alleviates it. But yeah, I mean, I can see that perspective, but all I know is that those 2 hour runs, 2 to 3 hour runs that I was doing, you know, towards the end were some of the most fun I've ever had. And I don't think I will, I got into other roguelikes because of the bite-sized nature of the runs and because of the piecemeal nature of upgrades and stuff. And for me, the extended runs and the immersion that I got from that is what allowed it to stand apart. So I'm on the other end of the fence, knowing that's not for everyone, but was for me.
To be honest, that's one of the most worthwhile qualities of it overall. And that's one of the most fascinating parts of it, because I love bite-sized roguelikes. Let me dive in. Let me do a run on my lunch break. Let me do a few runs. Like, you know, Rogue Legacy is a very bite-sized game. Obviously, as you get more powerful, you do spend longer, but it comes over time. Whereas in Returnal, they're sort of saying, like, one of the fundamental values of Returnal is knowing that your run has lasted an hour or 2 hours, and that only reinforces the power fantasy, or only reinforces the stakes of what's going on, the horror of what's going on, and the visuals and everything else. That is the pocket of Returnal that works perfectly. It's just that, for me, it can all be taken away from you so fast if a laser comes through the wall next to you and you couldn't even see where it was coming from. You just get blindsided. Some homing missile shoots you from behind, and you didn't happen upon the protection upgrade that would have given you 10% defense boost from two biomes ago. Or we didn't tell you that the resurrect thing doesn't carry across different biomes. So actually, you spent your ether in the wrong biome. And so stuff like that, I see the massive positives, but I think they're almost balanced against negatives like that. Even though, all said, it is one of the games of the year. Like, it just is.
It certainly is. And, you know,
up for it.
I think, I mean, you know, we play a lot of games, Scott Self, and we review a lot of games. And I was kind of worried that Returnal might just be a kind of flash in the pan, this is great for the moment game. But I feel like even if you don't like it, even if you've got criticisms for it, it's one worthy of game of the year discussion, and one worthy to be talked about when we look back on the PlayStation 5's, you know, opening launch and stuff.
That's the thing I was thinking as I was getting my ass handed to me on a platter, was how much I love the fact that it exists. Like, as a Sony first party release, the first major PlayStation 5 exclusive of the year, like, obviously it's only up against Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart and Destruction All-Stars, and I love that they led with something as challenging and brutal as this. Reminds me of Bloodborne, was like 2015 was when the PS4 really kicked in, and I do, obviously there was Demon Slayer, good anime, Demon Souls as well, Demon Souls even, but you know, still they're leading with these sort of gamer focused games, these ones that aren't just roller coaster rides and stuff like that. And I was going to make a nice little pivot to Call of Duty, speaking of roller coaster rides, but what are your closing thoughts on Returnal? Mine are, I'm going to finish Act 3, I think, anyway, which is where it asks you to do all six biomes in a row, but you do have all your late game upgrades for the proper secret ending. But I'm actually up for that. I'm game for that. I want to do that, I think, anyway. I don't know.
Do the platinum, mate.
I want to do the platinum. The thing, because of the amount of time that I've spent in it, I've almost got all the collectible trophies, because I've just, sheer time invested in those biomes. Like I said, combing every part of the tiles, I've got all those little glyphs. So they're all on 90%, so there's only one or two that I need for each one of those places. My final Returnal thoughts, I think that it requires a holistic view overall. I think that it is a very cruel game, but I think it's intentional, and there is a Sekiro-like feeling to overcoming its dickishness, let's say.
There is. I mean, for me, it's just that it's my game of the year at the moment. I don't think anything will beat it coming out over
you
the next
month. You wait till you get on Monimals,
mate. It's true. I mean, we got the GTA trilogy, which definitely doesn't count, but may count, coming out this week. Yeah, it's my game of the year. I feel like there's little else like it when you get in one of those good runs and you're just in the flow of it and you're just in the headspace of it. And I just think it's so responsive, so cool, such a great showcase for the PlayStation 5. that it's an essential purchase, I think. As long as you have the time and as long as you kind of know what you're getting in for, I think it is an essential purchase for a PlayStation 5 owner.
Mm-hmm. No, I would say that it's an essential purchase, but not for everyone. Just for someone who, if you've got a Soulsian bone in your body, if you don't run a mile from a game saying, screw you, do it again. Because it's that feeling crystallized. Like there's a bit of that in Souls, but at least you're banking XP over time. At least you're banking different stats over time. In Returnal, it is literally you are changing the item pool and you are changing the efficiency of weapons and giving them new abilities. But that is it. Like that is the holistic view for me that looks back on it. You are restarting with a pistol, but maybe that pistol has gained homing bullets or something like that. So it's a fascinating thing. There'll be more Game of the Year conversations going forward. I think it was already crowned some outlets Game of the Year who got in there very early. But we'll see what happens across the next 2 months. And there's also the Game Awards to come as well. But to pivot across into something else that came out on Friday, a game that I wasn't looking forward to at all. I wasn't even going to get it. And then we managed to get a review code through. So Josh has been playing that. And then I was looking at all the release footage. I was looking at some multiplayer reviews. And Call of Duty Vanguard, for as much as I just did not care, it's almost tradition now to get for Call of Duty weekend. You've got to get the donuts in, you've got to get the crisps in, you've got to get all the different things that make for a Call of Duty weekend. And I just sort of sat there. I think I messaged you just saying, like, what, am I not going to do this? Like, I mean, it's a toxic poison. But then I dropped £70 on it and I bought it immediately. And it's brilliant. The multiplayer is brilliant.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
It's pretty good.
It's really good. It's really surprising, to be honest, Scott.
Yes.
I remember before this game was announced, like you mentioned, you know, I was more excited for it in the proper run-up after it was announced, but kind of when it was just rumors that it's going to be a new World War II game, Sledgehammer Games is doing it, I kind of thought, this is not going to be good, is it? This is going to be kind of like something that they just rushed out, something that they've just done to tick a box because they need a Call of Duty. But actually looking at it, the multiplayer especially, I've not touched zombies. Your friend of mine, Rich Hudson, seems to say that's one of the worst ever, but I wouldn't know myself. The multiplayer is unbelievably solid, and the kind of step up from 2019's Modern Warfare that I think everyone hoped Black Ops Cold War could be, like, this is definitely kind of, you know, a next-gen card in a way. Like, I enjoyed Black Ops to an extent, but this feels like just head over heels better in all aspects.
The beta that they put out, that Champions Hill thing they put out, is not remotely reflective of what the final game is. Like, the amount they've changed the pace, like, how fast everything, how snappy everything is, the fact that if you just play, like, a free-for-all, a team deathmatch, any sort of PvP thing, and Champions Hill was PvP, but it was, like, small teams. If you're playing something that's more frantic, where engagement is higher, the fact that you can just punch away at some of the parts of the levels and create your own sight lines as, like, destructible parts of the environment, it's just so snappy. And like you said, in terms of the game engine, it is Modern Warfare 2019's engine, and that made me just completely forget that Black Ops Cold War even existed. Like, I remember getting that last year and just feeling like it just doesn't, it feels like a backstep. Like, it's not that you, it doesn't boil down to something as simple as just like mounting a weapon on a corner or something, which is what Modern Warfare brought in, but that is part of it. It's sort of like the new engine is so much snappier and faster and responsive, and just once you apply that, we need to talk about the tone, how much they do not care about historical accuracy whatsoever. Which works entirely in its favor for me. But the fact that it's so snappy and fast, it feels like an evolution of Modern Warfare, even though it is set in like the past.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, like you mentioned, the fact that it's on this Infinity Ward engine makes just the gameplay itself feel so incredibly tight, so incredibly snappy, and so incredibly impactful. Like, the weapons have a big kick to them. Mm-hmm. They feel punchy. The, you know, shooting someone feels impactful. Like you said, the added destruction to the levels makes combat a bit more tactile, a bit more frantic, and a bit more intimidating, I guess. You know, when you're getting shot at, it feels like you're under pressure if you're playing with headphones and stuff. It sounds far and away from the pea shooter weapons that you had in Black Ops Cold War, which was kind of like you were playing with toy guns or something. This really puts you in the moment. And I just feel like, you know, in terms of content that's in there, it's the kind of same old game modes that you would expect from a classic Call of Duty suite, by the exception of a new game mode called Patrol, which I really like. But it's the fact that you've got these 20 maps. Yeah, four of them are for Champions Hill only, but you've got 16 really impressive, surprisingly
super
impressive,
tight,
super tight multiplayer maps that I was just knocked away by. You know, when it comes to Sledgehammer's previous games, you know, COD World War II, COD Advanced Warfare, I always thought the map design in particular was kind of lacking. You know, I can't pick out a memorable map from either of those games off the top of my head.
No.
But I already know from 10 hours in the multiplayer now, there are going to be maps from this that I'm going to be thinking about and kind of sizing up next year's Call of Duty 2 in comparison, because they've just kind of nailed it. And immediately, you know, you get the feel for them. They don't feel too repetitive in their three-lane structure. You feel like there's a lot of verticality to some of them that you might not even expect the first time around, which again, add throwing the destruction, throw in the new combat pacing, which I want to touch upon, that can differentiate how many people are actually in those maps. And they've just nailed it. And it also helps that there are two World at War remastered maps in there, which are like fan favorites and just have my nostalgia receptors going off. But yeah, it's like map wise, man, it's a great, great selection.
That's the thing that absolutely elevates it for me, because I've not touched the campaign yet, and zombies can absolutely, it is dead to me. I don't care about zombies at all. But the multiplayer, it's the maps, it's the sight lines, it's the tactical feel of it. It's funny because with Call of Duty every year, like my wife is always just like, are you buying this again? And it was like this in Assassin's Creed every single time. I just need to know. It's like the new bullet for my Valentine album. I just need to know what they've done. I need to see what they've done. And I feel like in Call of Duty, it's almost like a sort of really well-paid chef making you the same cake every year. And it's like it's the exact same recipe every single year. Or it's very, very similar. Maybe they tweak a little bit. Maybe the frosting's a little bit different. Maybe they change one of the little ingredients, but it looks largely the same. And you're having a nice slice of that cake every year, and you're glad to have it because you can't have that at any other part of the year. And so maybe there's leftovers that you can carry over, but it's largely the same cake every year. And so that's how I started to think about it, where I'm just kind of like, okay, it's this time of the year, it's a new Call of Duty, it's Call of Duty weekend. I love all the stupid tie-in XP sponsored bullcrap, because I got the blooming Papa John's XP booster because I'm just that ill. And I also needed it after Returnal. But I love that whole period. And I feel like because they're serving you the same thing every year, we start getting really granular on what makes a good Call of Duty. And I feel like last year, it wasn't a good Call of Duty. It felt like a backward step. It didn't feel like a continuation of 2019. It just felt like more COD. It felt like that chef needing to make the cake. Just, here you go. I need to get it out the way. Just, here you go. I've ticked the box. Whereas this year, it feels like a passionate bunch of developers have made a good Call of Duty, and they cared about the maps, and they cared about the weapon feel, and they were able to carry on that energy from 2019 that felt so rejuvenating in the first place.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, it's strange considering this isn't a Treyarch game. Mm. It kind of feels like one. And I was joking with you before we started recording that I almost feel like I'm in a time loop, which is quite, you know, apt coming off of Returnal, because my favorite Call of Duty games are Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. Mm-hmm. And then the one I've loved the most since then was 2019's Modern Warfare. So it's like just a remake of it. And this very much feels, not just because there are a few remastered maps in there, but this does feel like almost a reboot of World at War, you know, right down to the tone, right down to the gore effects. You know, if you get shot by
the gore's insane.
Yeah, you get shot by a gun in this game, man. Like, you could be dismembered, your intestines are flying all over the place, which was the same tone. Which is the same tone that World at War had. You know, it kind of feels like it's going all in, for better or worse, in that really dark kind of warfare thing where everything is heavy, everything is bloody, everything is, you know, gunmetal and steel and fire and brimstone and all that. But it works, again, because of that engine. And it's just funny that, you know, now in 2021, I'm going through the exact same ups and downs that I had in 2007 going from Modern Warfare to World at War. You know, it feels like almost the exact same trajectory and the exact same experience, obviously, you know, tightened up to a T. They're not just remasters. They are, you know, bringing new things to the table, but it's kind of like I'm living the same life, or I'm living what I imagined it was. what I was living back then, should I say? It's weird.
Yeah, man, well, it is like that's the thing. They know how to play to their strengths. Like the thing, like you said, 2019's one was the most I'd played a COD in years, like in terms of just, I think you've left it installed for most of the year anyway. And I've reinstalled. I just love having a Call of Duty installed. It's a good casual game to drop into. But it is one of those things where, like I said, they know how to play to their strengths. And that's the thing with the tone, though. I wanted to like focus on that, is that they almost don't care anymore. And I don't care either. Like, if you want a super serious military shooter, go play Hell Let Loose. Like, they've done that. We've done that before. Maybe not necessarily. Call of Duty's never done something like an Operation Flashpoint or something. But for me, the way that they approach it, where they just sort of go, okay, in the campaign, rather, it's like, you know, these are real soldiers, these are real stories, but we're going to amp them up. We're going to have you doing this really overblown train heist. In the multiplayer, we're going to give you a whole bunch of weapon mods that didn't exist at the time. We're just going to have this big, overblown, almost A-team-like approach to World War settings. That works for me. You can give me a really stupid, atonal, gamey version of World War II, or World War I, whatever it is. I don't care. And I'll play it. I think I like that stuff. In regards to just how stupid and over the top it is, but that's also my comment on Call of Duty itself. It's a big cake that I eat every year.
And I think it nails it because it picks a tone and it sticks to it. It's not like this is World War II with a bunch of wacky, disparate things. You know, you've got some horrific violence over here, and you've got some, you know, fluorescent,
I was just gonna say, like,
weapon over here.
Pink bullets.
Pink bullets or whatever. You know, it does amp up the stuff. Obviously, you know, it goes really wild on exaggerating certain aspects, but I feel like it manages to keep everything under a consistent tone, or at least a consistent-ish tone that doesn't make it fall apart. It doesn't make it feel like incredibly artificial. This is like a Call of Duty World War II game, which if you've played any of them in the past, whether it's Call of Duty 2, whether it's Call of Duty World War II, whether it's World at War, you know, they've tackled more or less the exact same battles in many cases, the exact same content in many cases, and then amplified it to each developer's strengths. And like I said, this is very much a World at War one, where it's like, we're going to exaggerate everything, we're going to go over the top, but we're going to do it with this particularly almost nasty streak, where it's like, this is incredibly violent, this is incredibly apocalyptic in many ways.
The violence, I viewed it almost Tarantino-esque. Like, I mean, I'm only in the multiplayer, so I don't have the campaign framing, but it's just sort of, like you said, a stray bullet catches you and your entire leg comes off, or like, you know, you get caught with a good grenade and you're just left as a set of legs. Like, I'm just sort of like, okay. It's almost Unreal Tournament style.
Totally. I want to clarify that. I don't mean, you know, nasty in a way that it's, you know, trying to be some kind of like super serious commentary on violence. I do mean like nasty in the sort of callousness of a Tarantino violent scene, where it is just like, boom, your legs off, like you can blood everywhere, you know. It's this kind of like really mad spaghetti western sort of style thing, which I do think works. And I feel like it's, I've only touched the campaign a little bit, but that translates over there. And I was even I can't believe how impressed I am with this. Like, I really thought maybe the multiplayer will be good, but I won't like the campaign because I've not really enjoyed a Sledgehammer Games campaign yet. And again, very early days, only an hour or so in. But I think this is a huge step up compared to World War II, which I thought was very disappointing in its story mode. I thought its characters were quite nice, but in terms of the actual set pieces and the levels and the way you ushered through them, I just thought it was naff and kind of forgettable. Here, though, like you said, that opening train heist is really good. The second mission, which is you parachuting in, you know, like the night of D-Day, also off to a great start. And I think, again, the tone kind of comes through in those areas and kind of makes it way more memorable than World War II ever was.
I think there's a way for them to, take sort of known battles and just go, we're going to do, like I said, the almost A-team, big, dumb approach to it. And it is an interesting line to walk. It's that whole thing of like, how much inherent respect should there be for that time period and what people went through? And if that's the angle that you want to take, that's completely fine. I think that's the likes of Hell Let Loose does that perfectly. But also just for me, completely subjectively, personally, I will take a big, dumb action game that plays this well. And is trading on that sort of iconography. And here's the M1 Garand, and here's these different World War bombs and stuff. Like, I care about it on that level too. Like, I can care about it that little as well, to just have fun with that setting and everything. But yeah, I think because our expectations were absolutely rock bottom, it's managed to nail that stuff. Will shout out Advanced Warfare's campaign. Speaking of Sledgehammer campaigns, I love that game. It's so good. And no one else does. Advanced Warfare, Infinite Warfare, love those games. What are your closing thoughts on Vanny G?
Surprisingly good, surprisingly solid. I will say it's not without its faults. As all Call of Duty games have, there are like some issues with balance at launch. Some of the spawns are atrocious. If you try to play Dome on the Blitz pacing, which is like the kind of a ground war-esque mode where you have so many different people in it, like there's a good video doing the rounds that I encountered myself while I was playing, where you literally spawn facing the edge of the map, so you run and you fall straight off, and it's like, cool, thanks guys, this is awesome. There are issues with it, but it's very promising, and I'm having a lot of fun with it, and like I said, pleasantly surprised at this moment in time. Excited, and I won't get into this because there's not too much to get into, but excited to see what the Warzone integration is like, because that's coming December 3rd or 5th, and I think the bones here, the weapons here, it's promising, my friend.
It should be, yeah, it should be solid. They've got, yeah, like you said, the Warzone stuff isn't coming for the next few weeks. But yeah, it's very promising. I love also to very quickly touch on the file size isn't ridiculous. The file size isn't 200 gig. I think it's actually 57, I think. Is what
64,
it was down to?
64, I want to say. It's 57 on last gen, 64 on new cool. gen.
So that's way, I mean, it's not brilliant, but it's way more manageable than multiple hundreds of gigs that you need to have set aside, and also a segmented install. So I think you can delete the campaign after you're done and just keep the multiplayer, which is the one thing I wish they did for Modern Warfare. I just want Modern Warfare multiplayer and nothing else. Just let me delete the rest of it. But yeah, it's been games are coming back. Games continue to come back. We've got Call of Duty, you've got GTA on Friday, and then a bit of a wait, I guess, until Halo and stuff. Battlefield's in there as well. So we'll keep tackling different things. We'll keep coming at it from different multiple points of view, and I might think Returnal's game of the year. We'll just have to see how it goes. I've got one act left, but for now, this has been the wind up. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Get the platinum, mate. Get the platinum.
I almost definitely won't, but I will catch you next week. Bye bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.